Welcome to CUTV News Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters talk to today's top thinkers from all around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas that you can put to use in your personal or professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, we dig deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. CUTV News Radio, it's the show where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, hi, everybody. Welcome back to CUTV News Radio. Nice to have you with us. Today, a very important subject we're going to be focusing on, and it's something that we read about quite often, and it's terrible when it happens. And we're talking about workplace violence. You know, it really is a fact that our work experience affects our life at home, no question about it. And our home life affects how we respond and act at work. But when workplace or a workplace becomes a hostile environment, you know, people can't be the best they can be. In the organization, it can't grow. And in some unfortunate cases, an incident of workplace violence may occur. Our guest is an expert on this field. He is Dr. Richard Knowles. He's a co-founder of Nagel, Knowles & Associates, which is a consulting firm specializing in the full spectrum of workplace violence. Dick Knowles, as his friends call him, it points out that workplace violence manifests itself in several ways. It can be psychological, where somebody's being bullied or disrespected by his coworkers, and that can snowball over time to somebody coming into the office with a gun. Our focus, or their focus, is to bring all the skills that they have in leadership, safety, human resources, to help people and organizations learn how to be, number one, respectful. It is so critically important, not only for productivity, but for the people themselves to become the best they can be. Because, you know, people often feel isolated in organizations. They tend to create turfs and cliques with insiders and outsiders. And according to Dr. Knowles, it all begins with a lack of respect. Dr. Knowles and his associates use a proprietary tool that helps people to engage in focused, disciplined conversations to identify problems, solve them, and help build the connections they need with other people. And if they decide to work together to build trust and interdependence, tremendous energy and creativity is released. It can all happen quickly, even in a day, and then they teach people how to sustain it. According to our guest, it all begins with the critical role of leaders. Leaders need to promote a culture that encourages people to speak openly and honestly about problems in the office. Now, our guest is he's one of the co-founders of Nagel, Knowles & Associates. This is a firm that is generally brought in following an incident of workplace violence, and it might be some kind of newspaper article about sexual harassment or a bullying case or even a murder. These are tough things for businesses to deal with, and everyone loses, no question about it. But if they can bring people together to work in a way that builds interdependence and trust, then the people get a lot better. At all costs for leaders is to get out of the office and connect with their people. That's where the real effort is needed. So this is a subject we're going to explore a little bit in much more detail this morning with our guest, Dr. Richard Knowles. He's headquartered in St. Petersburg, Florida, and it is a delight to have him with us. Again, the co-founder of Nagel, Knowles & Associates. Dr. Knowles, welcome. Nice to have you with us. How are you today?
Well, I'm just fine, Doug. Thank you very much for having me on here to talk about this. Your summary was quite good.
Well, it's a fascinating subject, and it's something we don't hear talked about, at least not from a preventative point of view. We talk about it when it happens, and we see evidence of it, you know, on television and in the newspapers when these incidents happen. But I didn't even know there was an organization like you that focuses on this subject and helps companies when things like this happen. To get a little bit of information, tell me a little bit about your background and how did you get involved in this specific subject. I will start out by saying I know you spent many of your years in your career with DuPont, one of the great companies in the world and in the U.S. So tell me a little bit about your background. How about that?
Well, I got a Ph.D. in chemistry in 1961 and spent 14 years in research. And after getting 40 patents, I got curious about people, and the company let me begin to work on the people side of the business, and I wound up as a plant manager in several large chemical plants. And I spent a lot of time trying to understand why is it when you put a nice group of people together in an organization, stuff gets weird. They begin to get cliques and turfy, and they shut out people or they include people, and it gets to be really weird. And then if there's a crisis, like we had a small fire in our plant one time, they instantaneously become a high-performance team. They put all that stuff down, do extraordinary work, but once the crisis passes, they go back. So I pursued that now for the last 50 years, and I found some answers about how to help people learn how to maintain a high-performance organization and do it well and sustain it and get terrific results if they want.
Well, that's good to know. So let's present some of the questions first. You've found a lot of the answers, but you talk about people forming cliques and things like that in the office. That happens everywhere. I don't know how you prevent that from happening. Do you? I don't think you can.
Yeah. Well, it depends on the way in which management chooses to lead. Everywhere we've gone in the world where you have management that is imposing things from the top and telling people to do this and that and talking at their people, you get a pretty consistent set of behaviors like these dysfunctional behaviors. But with that same group of people, if you begin to listen to them, sit down and have a cup of coffee together, tell the truth, apologize when you screw up, get to know each other, people begin to shift to become very, very much more purposeful, and information begins to flow openly, and people begin to do stuff that they really want to do. Most people want to be winners. Most people don't want to go into work and get beat up and pushed around and have to deal with all the screwy politics. So if we can learn to sit together and talk, it makes a huge difference. And the way in which we do that is with this particular tool that helps to focus the conversations in a disciplined way. And the people will co-create what it is they want to do. We don't see ourselves as change agents. We see ourselves as people that help organizations solve complex problems.
That's really interesting. What is this tool you've developed that you've referred to?
Well, the technical name is called the Process Enneagram, Enneagram. That's just a Greek word for a 9-term system. And we look at what... We look at the patterns that people can see visibly, and then we begin to help them understand the hidden patterns inside by which work takes place and leadership takes place, and they begin to get it. And I think that I've done enough of these workshops that I think people know it at a deep level, although they don't know what it looks like nor how to say it, you know, talk about it, but they do it. And I can see this happening and unfolding in TV stories about crises all the time.
Right.
And so it's I think it's a very deep pattern that people connect with. And we've worked with people who range all the way from college professors to people who are illiterate. And they all get it. And we begin to talk together. And by the end of the day, they are so excited about what they've learned together and what they want to do that it's fun to watch them grow and learn. And they create their future. And when people create their future, they don't resist change. They create change.
Let's explore a little bit about what your firm does, Nagel, Knowles, and Associates. Now, there are three of you, Robin Nagel, Claire Knowles, and yourself. It's interesting. You know, I have the assumption that you found a second career after spending so many years with DuPont and, you know, in positions like plant manager and things like that. Now you're doing that. How did you three get together to form this organization? Tell me about that to begin with.
Well, we've been on this journey quite some time, and I've been on it with my wife, Claire, who's learned a lot of this with me. And as you know, we've been married now for 30 years, so we do a lot of work together. And then we met Robin Nagel about a year ago, and he was very interested in our work, and he wanted to learn more and more about it. And then we became involved with the Workplace Violence Prevention Institute from Kathleen Bonzak. Kathleen Bonzak.
Okay.
And became much more aware of this and realized that the things we knew how to do with safety, with helping people on the HR front, helping people learn how to talk together, all applied very much to this whole issue of workplace safety and violence. And we look at this violence thing as a continuum from lack of respect. It begins to come down, if I don't respect you, then I can push you around or I can start to bully you, which is more aggressive and more repetitive and tougher. and can snowball, and over time things can build up. And somebody may be struggling with a problem, and finally it overcomes them and they get violent. But the violence is at the way at the end of this thing, and we could get ahead of it. And if we do, companies can save an enormous amount of money. It's critical in organizations for information to flow. Organizations are like living systems. They're complex, adapting, self-organizing networks of people. Information has to flow. If we have people who are bullies and pushing people around, people will not share information. They'll pull back. They can't learn together very well. And that costs a huge amount of money. And my guess is that it might cost as much as 25% of the payroll cost. It just gets slipping through people's fingers invisibly. For example, if you have a company of 100 people and you're paying them about $50,000 a year, your payroll's about $5 million a year, so you're probably losing $1 to $1.5 million a year in waste because of this dysfunctional behavior. So if we get out ahead of the problem, not only do we eliminate the real bad behaviors, the companies can make a ton of money on top of it. So it's a win for everybody. So, you know, I'm coming out of business, I want to help the company save money, not just spend it on lawyers and all this stuff that happens if somebody's gotten killed at work.
Well, tell me a little bit about how your firm works. I mean, are you asked to come in after an incident has happened in a company, or are there other companies that are kind of forward-looking and ask you to come in and take a look at their organization and see if they have a problem that maybe they can prevent something from happening? How does it work?
It can work both ways. Certainly if there's somebody, you know, we've had a tragedy, everybody's tuned into that.
Sure.
But there are also some people, some organizations where the management is frustrated. They've been trying to make the organization better for years and it's not working. And they get a high level of frustration, and they'll bring us in to look at that kind of a thing, for example. So it can happen both ways. And the biggest challenge when we come into the organization is to help the leaders see how they need to work differently, perhaps. They need to go out and talk with their people. And I've had folks say, well, I don't have time for that. I got work to do. That's true. But when I was out walking around and talking with people, things got better and my work got easier, actually, because more and more people began to do the things that we needed. And a lot of the screwy behavior stopped. And the whole place got more purposeful. So, for example, I was working in a big DuPont plant in West Virginia that was struggling and a lot of fighting and, you know, bad stuff. And over time, working this way and talking with people, listening, learning together, being respectful, sometimes arguing, sometimes hugging each other, the organization improved to the point where our earnings went up 300%, injury rates went down 98%, productivity went up 45%. Everywhere we looked, there was extraordinary improvements in performance, which the people did. My role was really to keep people talking together and working together and keep a clear focus on what we needed to do for the business. Like, we had to make and use highly hazardous materials safely. We had to do it economically. We were in global markets. We had to compete. And we sold products to Japan and China. We could compete in those markets. But you've got to have the organization functioning really, really well so that your costs are going to be good enough so you can compete. And if you're just throwing it away with all this dysfunctional behavior, that's a shame. You don't need to lose $1 million a year for a 100-person company.
Yeah, no kidding. So when you come into an organization, I assume the three of you come in, what happens? I mean, what do you do to go to work for them? I gather you can't do this in one day, right?
You can do a lot in one day. Trying to build sustainability is a longer project. But we come in to work with the top people in the organization and talk with them about what is it you really want. We'll do some surveys at first. We'll walk around and see what's going on. Then we'll sit down and talk together and begin to inquire, what do you all want to have happen, and how can we help you do that? And then we'll develop and tailor-make an approach using all three of our sets of skills that is right for them at that point in time. And then we help them have the conversations they need with people, maybe go out with them and begin to talk with their people. We discover management, a lot of managements have a hard time talking with their people. They can talk at them, but to go out and talk with them, like you might do at a cocktail party or
right.
dinner together.
Right.
And when
right.
we do that, people begin to open up. Now, it takes a little bit of time because, you know, management, you know, when I went into West Virginia, I came in from northern New York. This outsider into that tight culture was a big, big deal. So I had to work really hard to begin to break down the barriers, and over time we were able to do that. And work got better, performance got better. I felt a lot better about myself as I watched people grow and develop. And some people did extraordinary things. You know, learning to use computers, learning to do training together. Some of them went on to become corporate trainers for DuPont, who were, you know, some of these folks were hourly workers who you know, blossomed and came forth. So
mm-hmm.
people want to be winners. People want to be the best they can be. And people get terribly, terribly frustrated when they can't. And that leads to all kind of screwy behavior.
Well, that poses a question of give me some ideas of the spectrum of workplace violence. Give me some examples, you know, on both sides of the spectrum, because it's quite wide.
Oh, it is. So let's begin with respect. So I treat you as a real person. I listen. We talk together, try to tell the truth together, come back and tell you that things have changed, apologize when I screw up, you know, being respectful and trying to honor each other, but also having high
mm-hmm.
standards and talking about what we're really trying to do, and we've got to focus at it. And we're not going to put up with a bunch of bullying and that kind of stuff, so we have to smoke that out. The other side of the coin is ignoring people, not listening, telling them what to do, having repetitive patterns of disrespect, you know, personal attacks, diminishing people, putting them down, in repetitive ways. I'm not talking about the workplace becoming so sterile we can't have, you know, a good time together, you know, kidding
right.
and that kind of stuff. It's just got to be, you know, in a good spirit. It can't be mean-spirited because people shrink back and then they don't share, then they don't talk, then they don't learn together. And that kills the organization. That costs a huge amount of money because of, you know, high turnover, high levels of absenteeism, people. You know, protecting their turf, not helping each other, grievances. And a big piece of it is unknown lost opportunities. Because as people begin to talk together and learn together and do things together, new stuff begins to come up that's possible to do. So, for example, a big power company one of my friends was working for, he was in charge of doing overhauls of powerhouses. And this is a fairly standard operation from one to the next, so you can compare them. And he's working with a very tough union environment, but he built a great respect with the men and the women. They cut the cycle time from 3 months to 1 month for an overhaul. That's a huge savings for the company, yet one you could not have predicted before you started. But it's there. We see that happen all the time as people begin to talk together and really care about wanting to be better and trying to help the business get better. Things bubble up that people didn't see before, and that's really kind of fun to see that. And it can go, you know, some of this can happen fairly quickly as people decide that they want to work together differently. I was working in a big sugar mill in Australia. They're making 65 railroad cars a day of raw sugar, which is a heck of a lot.
Yeah, well.
They had about 350 men. They're having about 35 serious injuries a year and killing somebody every 12 to 18 months. So we went in, and after about 3 weeks of working together with them and their management and talking and getting to know people, their injury rate went to zero and stayed at zero for 9 months. I lost track of it after that. But they decided they could work together differently. They decided, not me. I couldn't oppose it. But as we talked together and asked questions, you know, why are you doing this? What do you want to do? They begin to get the idea they can do a lot better than they do. But we've got to help them and encourage them. And this is a huge role for management to play. We've got to create the culture and set the culture. It's okay for people to talk. It's okay to share. It's really important to learn. We're not going to tolerate bullying and disrespectful behaviors. You know, and you got to go after bullies. And sometimes bullies are very clever. They can project a very nice image upward in the organization and a hard one down. So you've got to be out and around and talking and listening. And you begin to find them, and then you've got to shine the light of day. Bullies can't stand the light of day. And so, you expose what they're doing and publicize it, and that's one way for bullies to, quit doing what they're doing. And occasionally we had to terminate somebody.
You know, you hear so much that term used today in so many aspects of life. When you see something, say something. And, of course, obviously that would hold true in a company organization. When you hear things like suicide and murder in the workplace, it's obvious whoever it was that was the person who committed the incident made a conscious decision to perform that act at work. When somebody comes into an office in the morning at 8 o'clock in the morning with a gun and shoots several people. And that indicates that it all had its genesis in the workplace itself. How do you coach people, I guess, to try and prevent things like that from happening? Do you work on that aspect?
Well, we work at it through trying to open up the conversations and help people feel it's safe to talk together, to help each other, to look out for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And pay attention. If we're fighting all the time and you're feeling bad, Doug, that's tough. Doug's got a tough day. But if we care about Doug and we want to help him and say, hey, what's going on, without being intrusive in your personal stuff, you got to pay attention.
Sure.
But we can begin to care about each other and look out for each other and begin to say, something's weird going on here. Let's see what we can do to help. But if the open flow of information is there and people are being encouraged and people, when they speak up, are supported by management, not just stick their neck out and get clobbered, then you begin to have a caring workplace and people begin to pay attention. Now, can we stop it 100%? Probably not, but we can probably reduce it a great deal. I was at a conference a couple of weeks ago and somebody said, all people who are bullied, suffer. Active shooters have been bullied, but not all bullies are active shooters. So, some people can tolerate being pushed around, and a lot of people do, although it's not too bad. They have to waste their energy that way.
Yeah.
But if we keep bullying people, these things build over time. Somebody doesn't get up in the morning and decide, I'm going to go in and shoot the place. They've been struggling with something awful for a long time, and they finally just give up, but this is all I know what to do.
That's all pretty interesting.
It's a continuum.
So it's conversation is one of the keys, but from the leaders on down. Well, something else that just comes to my mind. We hear so much about sexual harassment in the workplace on days like this. I know you focus mostly on workplace violence. Is that something that you're dealing with today as well?
Sure, that's a form of harassment. If I don't respect you, then I can push you around. If you're a woman, I can try to take advantage of you if I feel like it.
Yeah,
it's all
yep.
part of that continuum. It's a one thing leads to the next all the way down. It's a snowball that begins to build up as it rolls down from lack of respect. So it goes way back up there. But if we build respect, the companies can save a ton of money, which is right now slipping through their fingers, and they don't even realize, for the most part, they're losing that much.
I was going to ask you if you have any examples of success stories. I guess it's hard to find a success story for example, you've gone in, you've talked to a company, and they haven't had any problems. Then that you could consider it a success story. But the kind of companies you do this with, and if you have a success story, how would you describe that?
Well, the success stories I really have are from those where I was working with the people in DuPont. So, for example, I'll tell you about one shift worker, and it was related to public affairs. Now, public affairs, when companies got a problem, they usually bring out somebody from the top of the organization to talk to the media.
Right.
Well, we had opened up conversations to the plant. People were involved in all kinds of things, and this one shift worker was involved in our site-wide environmental teams. One morning she came into work at 6 a.m. and heard this talk show. These guys were talking about all the pollution from the plant. Well, she knew that the steam plumes that they saw that were glistening at night were not dirty chemicals. She knew it was water because she was on the environmental teams. And she called me, and she was really upset about it. And then she said, so I've called them up, and they're coming to the plant next Monday for 3 hours I want you to take the first hour, and here's what I want you to talk about, and I'll do the other two. Now my public affairs is being run by a shift worker, and it was one of the very best visits we ever had. So what happens as we begin to open it up and people begin to do things, it becomes leaderful. Somebody sees that something needs to be done, and they take the initiative to begin to work on it and get the help they need. So Becky called me and told me what I was supposed to do. So I was a plant manager working for the shift worker, and it was one of the very best visits we ever had.
That's very good. Tell me a little bit about your team. I mean, there's you with your background at DuPont, Claire Knowles. Now, I know she's your – you met her at DuPont, I presume. Would that be right?
That's right. We met in Niagara Falls. I went in as a plant manager. The plant was struggling a lot. We're within the shadow of Love Canal, so the environmental issues up there were horrendous. And it was a very tough plant. I was having trouble with my own marriage, and it was not working very well, and it was very difficult and gradually falling apart. And these plant situations can be very demanding. You make a decision, and you get the answers, and that you better be good decisions.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And she was working there at the plant as well in the HR group, and her life was falling apart as well. I didn't know that at the time, so we sort of found each other. Got the company kind of upset, so they transferred me to West Virginia, and so
really,
and we had
because
a,
of that. Oh my gosh!
Oh yeah!
Oh boy!
And
okay,
we got married, and she had a daughter already, not from our relationship, and she couldn't leave New York, so we had a commuter marriage for 8 years. It was a different way of doing things, but we're married now 30 years.
Good
doing
for you.
Good.
I wanted to kind of get a picture of the experience that the three of you have. And Robin Nagel, tell me a little bit about him, what his background, and why the three of you make such a great team in this field.
Robin brings a whole set of background and knowledge that I didn't have. He had a career in the Army. He became a sergeant major, which is very high level for a non-commissioned officer. He was an MP, so he was in security in the military. When he left the military, he did a lot of security work, including some with Starbucks. And he got very, very much interested in the kind of approach we take in working with organizations, and he found us. And we started talking together, and after about a year, we said, maybe we could put something together with the three of us and put our skills together to work on an important issue that's right out there right now that people are struggling with. And so as far as I know, there aren't very many people taking a holistic point of view of coming at this, where we can look at security and safety, leadership, human resources, all at the same time, and help people figure out what is it you need to do that's right for you. We don't come in with a canned program and say, this is what you've got to do. We come in with a lot of knowledge and talk together with the people and help figure out what it is that they want to do that's right for them. And so they co-create. We'll co-create with them what it is they want. And that comes about using this process Enneagram conversation tool, which helps to open up the conversations, helps people solve complex problems, helps them build the social connections they need, who to talk with.
Yeah.
And it releases energy and creativity, and it happens all at once. That can happen in one day. I've seen that happen in one day with organizations, which is really fun to see. Now, to sustain it, it takes a different, a little more work with them. But coming out of that first day, we create the map that helps them to sustain it and use it. So when I did this work for the city of Niagara Falls,
Doctor, I hate to interrupt you, but I got to tell you something. We're running out of time here. Unfortunately, I want to make sure to get across that you've got a great website, your firm does. It's Nagel, N-A-G-E-L-E, N-A-G-E-L-E, Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S, and Associates.com. They're based in St. Petersburg, Florida. And if you want to explore more and know more about this outstanding firm, that's where you go. Go to the website. You'll find out how to get in touch with our guest, Dr. Knowles, and the firm itself. Doctor, thank you. This has been wonderful chatting with you, and it's been a very important subject, so thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Okay?
Thank you very much, Doug, for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
You're welcome. That's it, everybody. Have a great day. See you next time. Bye for now.